Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrap Web. Brian, it's good to be back. Take back control of my seat from Ben Orenstein.
Yes. Good to have you back, Jordan.
Thanks, man. How you been?
Been good. This week, I feel really productive, and I think I know why. It's because I'm going away next week. My family, we're going out to Cape Cod, which we do pretty much every summer. A couple hours drive from here, go to the beach for a few days, do some biking. So that'll be most of next week. And whenever I have a trip coming up, it's like the week before I'm like super productive. It's like I find it to be at like the perfect time box. Is like when I know that I'm going away, you know, make a list of a few things to just get done in these last few days. So
you should go away more often.
I should, right? Yeah.
Sounds like a great hack. Things are good on my side. You know, we went to Michigan with the family for 2 weeks. 2 weeks is too long, by the way. It's too long, at least for me, at least right now. But it was a great time. Northern Michigan's a beautiful place in the summer. I find it a bit different from you. I find the run-up to a vacation stressful. And then after the vacation, that's stressful too because you're trying to get caught up. So that threw me off. And then the curveball was 5 days after we got back from Michigan, we moved houses. So we bought a house. Hallelujah. That's great. Very happy about that. But whoa, moving is a big thing and it's exhausting and it's financial stress and it's just things feel out of control. You're living out of boxes for a few days. So that's been
a move is like that's way worse than a trip. That's like you can't plan anything for that whole month at least of just
nothing. And I'm in a habit of doing some work in the evening. Because during the day, I like to communicate with people and do my meetings and do calls. And some of the things that require quieter introspection and thought and writing things out, I like to do in the evenings. And all of that was eliminated. And so I felt unproductive. And then you're just thinking about other things. Fortunately, my assistant came up big in all the account transitions, all the extra things that that I would have been responsible for.
Actually, that reminds me, I've been meaning to, on the podcast here, I want to loop back with you about your assistant. It's been a few months now or a few weeks.
It has been. It has been a few months.
Maybe at some point today, maybe we'll hit that for a minute.
So at this point in time, we're moved in. We've got a new house. And I feel very excited to get back to a normal routine.
Yeah, awesome. Well, what do we got on the list today? Got a couple things.
Definitely. For me, the big thing is an update on the sales process. The change we made on July 1st, removing the self-serve free trials and requiring a demo. So big update on that and how that has led to reprioritizing a lot of features. And what that's done internally. So, I mean, that's really been the theme of the company over the past few months.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah. So at the beginning of the week, like Monday, I shipped a pretty big feature in Process Kit, which is custom fields. That took a good week and a half to get all built out and tested and working. And finally, on Monday, that went live. And on that same day, I also emailed the entire list and everything and got a lot of really good feedback. And I publicized that roadmap page that I had talked about. The customer count is very, very slowly, but still inching upwards. So that's good. I don't know. Something about that update that I sent on Monday seemed to get a lot of people from the list to like suddenly pay attention and give some good positive feedback.
What was in there? Was it a highlight of a feature?
I think part of it is because I actually emailed the entire list when sometimes I only email like about new features. I usually only email the people that I've already sent invites to. And this time I sent an email to the entire early access list to tell them about the roadmap thing. It's like, now you can keep tabs on exactly which features have shipped cool. And everything.
So it's a big update for them.
Yeah. I think a lot of them probably haven't heard from the Process Kit list in a long time. So that helped. And so that shipped on Monday. So then I was like, you know, I know that I have this 1 week before my trip. And this always happens. Like after I finish a really big project like that, like shipping a big feature, for like half a day, I'm like, what do I do next? Like there's like literally like 10 different things that I could dive into next. I don't know what to do. But this one thing has been gnawing in the back of my mind with Sunrise KPI, which is the other very small SaaS app that I built a few months back. It's had this free plan since I launched it back in January, and it gets new free signups every single day this whole year, you know. And it's got a handful of customers on it, but nothing great. It's a pretty low priced product. But I was like, you know, one of these days I'm just going to spend like a day or two and just kill the free plan and go to a more standard free trial to the paid plan. So I was like, let me just go in there and do that only. There's all these other features, these requests. I'll get those in at some point, maybe in the future. But for now, just kill the free plan. Spend no more than 2 days on it because I had to rework some code for that to work. And I did that. So Tuesday and Wednesday, that's essentially what I did. And then yesterday and today, I'm just sort of about to ship a small feature update in process kit and then wrap things up. So yeah, I'll talk about the, I don't really have much else to say about the pricing thing, but I had it listed here, the Sunrise pricing thing.
Yeah, I'm a little curious on it, on what the point was, if it was to generate revenue or to quiet things down from free users.
All right, so we'll hit that on the list. And then the other thing is, I spoke for a long time last week about hiring a developer. Got Ben Orenstein's feedback on that, which is really helpful. Not a whole lot of to update on that front, but I'm definitely still thinking about it. And I did put up an ad in Upwork. I guess I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that stuff. And then kind of back of my mind is this Process Kit marketing site, which I've been sort of going back and forth with an illustrator on. It's making a little bit of progress, but it's not much has changed there. Anyway, that's what I got.
Cool. Good, man. Well, let's jump into it. Why don't I start off on the sales process side? Mm-hmm. Okay. So to back up just a little bit, on July 1st, we removed the ability to sign up for a free trial. We're now using an application process. I don't even want to call it a demo. We've stopped calling it a demo. It's really not a demo. So what we have is a multi-step process that really slows things down and only lets in qualified users into the software. So we have an application. If you go to carthook.com right now, what you'll see is apply to work with us. That application is real. We reject about half the people that fill that out and say, this isn't right for you. Here's a link to our competitor. The other half, we say, you are a good fit. Let's set up a time to talk. And then that is another layer in the process. Once we talk to them, then we finalize whether or not it is a good fit. And then if they are a good fit and we both want to work together, then we send them a link to sign up. And at that point in time, they then pay up front. They have a 30-day money-back guarantee, and all of a sudden, they're in the system. Yeah. And so,
and we talked about this about a month ago or so.
The aim was to effectively to create a healthier company with a healthier customer base, with our employees doing work for the right people, as opposed to having what I can describe as a washing machine, just a lot of activity, but not all of it good. A large portion of the work we're doing on the success and support side was for people that were not going to end up staying on as good paying customers. And so what that's led to, and this is perfectly expected, but it has led to a difficult period where we shaved off a good percentage of our revenue. If you think about what's happening, all the merchants from the past 60 to 90 days that have normally been churning out are still churning out, but we are not replacing them with hundreds and hundreds more. So it was fully expected that revenue was going to go down, but it's no fun watching it go down. And it's like an exercise in balancing the emotion of that and the logic of, no, this is better for the business. It's better for the long term.
I mean, it's been a month or 2 months or so with the new system in place. Yes. So are you starting to see the good side of that, like a higher conversion rate and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. So we're seeing a lot of good from it, but that good doesn't play itself out fully for a while, right? So the change in pricing was from $300 a month up to $500 a month, but it also introduced a higher transaction fee. And so that transaction fee is on processed revenue. And by definition, these larger merchants we're working with, it takes longer for them to start processing revenue and get set up and do the whole thing and get their company oriented and their tracking, their analytics. And so we haven't really seen that piece of it kick in. So we don't really know the full benefit. We don't know what the new average revenue per user is really going to be. I assumed it was just going to be 500 because I didn't want to take in that additional optimism. In reality, it's going to be closer to 1,000, but that hasn't kicked in yet. We're in an in-between period where we are seeing the pain. We're seeing some of the benefit, but not all the benefit. And we just kind of have to stick with it because we believe it's the right thing. So it's a tough period.
This sort of makes me think of this mental thing that I always notice with myself. I'm sure plenty of other people can relate to this, where it's every new product that I ever put out there, I honestly have the assumption that, like, you know what, this one, like, just nobody's going to buy this. I don't care how great I think it is. Like, I just assume that, like, really this one is going to be the one where just no one really buys it. And then like the first customer comes in and it's like, I'm genuinely surprised that somebody paid for something.
Are you though? Or is it like a self-defense mechanism in some ways where you don't want to get your hopes up too much? You've been doing this a while.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've sort of conditioned myself to not get my hopes up.
Yes.
Just to err on the side of, like, don't get your hopes up. So, like, just focus and get the work done. But the same goes for, like, pricing changes, like the Sunrise change or anything else like that, raising from 300 to 500. Like, it's still like, I go into it like with the assumption, like, you know what, it worked at 300, but it's not going to work at 500 until I'm proven wrong. You know,
I had a lot of those same fears. That the difference is there are multiple people around me that are focused on it also. And then it's really hard to figure out are we all delusional? Are we all just telling ourselves it's going to be fine? Are we all wrong or are we all right? It's very tough.
And I'm very much going through that with Process Kit too. Like, we have some paying customers now, some conversions, but they're few and far between. Even if I got a customer last week, like a whole week will go by and it's like my mind slowly comes back into that phase. Like, all right, well, that was the only one. We're never going to get a second one. Like, you know.
Yes, it's tough because you do want to behave optimistically, but you don't want to set yourself up. All the stress in this is around cash management for me. Our expenses are significant now. We have 25 people and we spend a lot of money every month. There's no two ways about it. It's stressful on the cash management. I'm cool going into the red for a few months, but how much, right? For how long? And so I think the timing is going to work out in that the holidays are coming up and that will paper over a lot of these things. So the revenue just goes up. If I look at last year, our revenue went up 100% between September and January. And I'm not assuming that's going to happen again. But if it goes up 50%, if it goes up 25%, it's still significant. I'm coaching myself. I'm talking to myself a lot and seeing it through it. And yeah, I think I'll pause there and head over to you. And then when we come back to me, it'll be what impact that's having on feature development and the roadmap. So how about you talk to us, baby?
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be interesting too. All right, we'll come back to that. So the Sunrise KPI, I already kind of covered it, but basically since I shifted onto Process Kit, which I did start Process Kit a little bit in mid-2018, then some things happened, long story, but then November, December is when I basically paused my work on Process Kit. And I talked about it a bit on the podcast, whatever, that there were reasons for that. And that's when I was like, you know what, I've got a window of about 60 days here. Let me try and build this simple product, Sunrise KPI, because it was like my first real product that I was building myself in Ruby on Rails. I had done some practice stuff. This was going to be a real thing, solving a pain for myself. Like, I really wanted to get email reports with my numbers every morning. And I was like, that's something that I could probably build. I'll learn a bunch while I build it. And who knows, maybe somebody else will find this useful. And then somebody put it up on Product Hunt. It went to the top. And ever since then, I get a lot of feedback about it, a lot of tweets. I get about 2 or 3 signups a day, sometimes more. A lot of those are probably zombies at this point, but we do have some paying customers and some people use it for free. But it always sort of bothered me because, like, it was always a pretty low conversion rate. Maybe that's expected with a freemium model, but I was like, you know what? Like, I really just got to get in there and kill the free plan and go with the paid only. But as I got so focused on Process Kit, I was like, I'm not going to touch anything else except for Process Kit for a long time now. But this week was the first week where I was like, you know what? I just finished this really big feature. I've got other stuff to do, but I don't have a lot of time because I'm going away next week. So let me just like grab these couple of days to shift over to Sunrise for 2 days and just make that one change. And I did. And so now it's literally just one plan, $15 a month or $150 a year. There's an annual option. So it's super cheap.
Is it a trial upfront?
14-day trial now.
Okay. Credit card?
No credit card upfront. Okay. The nice thing is that now you get all the features, all the capabilities from day one during your free trial. Whereas before, free users were limited to only weekly reports and you can only connect 3 metrics. So now you can just do unlimited and you can get daily reports every day for 14 days. And then if you want them to keep going, then you'll upgrade. And the email reports themselves have the call to action to upgrade. And so all that stuff is in place now. I did get a few new free trial signups since I announced the pricing change. So we'll see if those convert. I did not grandfather in the free users. So I announced to them that, and it's something like between like 700 and 1,000 or so free users at this point. Again, like many of them are probably zombies, but
still, that's pretty significant. What do you mean you didn't grandfather them? What happens to their account?
Yeah, so I emailed them. I said, you guys get 2 months free from this point forward. And then in October, you've got to upgrade. But the nice thing is that they immediately get all those limits lifted. So now they can do daily emails. Oh, now they
for
can
full
do
2 months.
Yeah. Essentially, they have a 2 month trial instead of
the
14.
So now
days.
You're going to see which of your users get addicted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So we'll see. It is a good product too. Like I literally open my Sunrise report every single morning. Like no question. Like I really like those
email aggregator products. I open up my Profitwell email every day.
Yeah.
Yep.
There are other feature requests that I've had like repeatedly that I would definitely like to build and put into a higher price tier at some point, but I'm not doing that right now. Right now it's just kill the free plan and that's it.
I think that was the perfect thing to do because it puts all the leverage into one thing that you did in 2 days. And now you'll see if every month you started to add a few $100 in MRR, that might warrant your attention. Do some SEO, add in some premium features. It's not bad.
Yeah. And this product, it's in like a competitive space where there's like plenty of other metrics tools and analytics dashboard tools and all this stuff. But the thing with all of them is that they're super complicated. And rightfully so. We're like, there's a lot that you could do with metrics, and I'm trying to make Sunrise be the anti-complicated, like super simple. It'll probably be too simple for most people, but if you just want your key numbers emailed to you every morning, this is a cheap, like no-brainer tool to just get set up. You know?
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think it has potential to sneak up on you. A year from now, all of a sudden, it's a few K in MRR. Like, wait a minute, maybe it does warrant a bit more focus or someone to run it. And I find it interesting that you didn't grandfather existing customers, which is the same thing that we did with our pricing change. And I took a lot of care on the blog post announcing it and built it up in my head as, whoa, we're about to get some real blowback. I'm scared this might, you know, all of us, we talked about this, are scarred from the drip experience.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that you made the right move with yours. If they were paying customers and I was just raising the price on them, I would consider grandfathering them in. I don't know whether or not I would, but I would be more open to the idea of grandfathering. Whereas in this case, they were free users. So I was like, I'm just killing the free plan altogether. So
yeah,
that's that.
Makes sense. Makes sense. And we didn't grandfather, but we grandfathered a portion of the cost. So the subscription remains the same, but the transaction fee doesn't. So anyway, okay. So on my side of things, we spoke about the change in process and what that's doing to my stress level and finances and just like what it really means to get through this transition period. The other part of what it's doing is it has narrowed the spectrum of the market that we're talking to. So if you think about a situation where we used to speak with several hundred merchants every month that were coming in, and then the feature requests were from this larger, wider spectrum. And now going through this demo process and qualification process, it's a much smaller number of people to begin with. And it's also a smaller segment of the market that we're focusing on. And now what's happening is that all the feature requests and all the feedback is now coming from that one specific segment. So it's much better, right? Now we know what to build for the right people. But what it's doing is it's making us realize that we had some of our prioritization wrong. And the features that this segment of the market that we're focused on, it's effectively showing us how off we were. We weren't totally off, but some of the things that we thought were important weren't important to this segment of the market, and we want to focus everything on this segment. So it's making us rethink our prioritization. And what happened along with that is I caught the Basecamp bug for a few months, and I'm on the shape up.
The shape up.
Yep, I'm on the bus, baby.
Everybody's shaping up.
Yep, shaping up. You know, and when I first read that title, Shape Up, I was like, oh, they're telling me to like get better, like shape up, son, you know, that type of thing. But it's not. It refers to a part of the product development process that we currently don't have enough of. And so what they're referring to when they say shape up, what they call the shaping part of the process, is what happens before something goes into development. So we've decided that this feature is important. Instead of just putting into development, let's shape it up, right? That's what they call it. Let's figure out who it's for, what it needs to do, and how much we're willing to bet on it. Are we willing to bet 6 weeks on it, or we just want to bet 2 weeks on it and see if it's right? That portion of the process we really lack. And it's no surprise now in hindsight that some of the features that are coming out of our process, when I get a look at them, I scratch my head a little bit like, why would we do it that way? That doesn't it seem obvious that we should do it slightly differently? And a lot of that is it's my fault. It's the management's fault that we are not doing enough work at the beginning part of the development process. And then what we're really doing is we're leaving some of these product decisions to the engineers, which is not fair to them and also not likely to lead to the right outcome because they have the farthest distance between them and the merchant.
Yeah.
It seems obvious in retrospect.
I have not read Shape Up yet, but I've listened to Ryan Singer on a few different podcasts, doing the podcast tour for Shape Up.
Yes.
Which that's like my way of like reading these popular books now is just hear the author on a podcast tour and I get the gist.
you get 90% of it from those,
right?
You really do. But when you have questions, those questions get answered by the book.
My very basic understanding of the concept is that what they do is they have this like high level meeting or maybe a series of meetings first to just define the very broad strokes shape of the feature. And my understanding of that would be like, these are the key goals that this feature must solve for, it's the key problems that this, it must do this, this, and this, but the actual implementation, that's up to the designers and developers to get that working. They have this thing where that they call like breadboards, which is like not even a wireframe, but just like super like scribble what it might look like. It sounds like that high level meeting is about figuring out like these are the two or three things that we don't want to cut corners on, and the details you can go figure out, but like at the very least it has to do it to do this, you know?
Yes. And part of that conversation is how much are we willing to bet on it, right? So they look at it as bets on, I'm not willing to bet 6 months on this thing. And so if doing it at minimum takes 6 months, then we're just not doing it. And so that really helps because a lot of times I find myself in a situation where I say, okay, guys, if we want feature X, how long is it going to take? And they come back to me and say, well, it's 6 to 8 weeks. And I say, okay, let's do it. We need it. So let's do it. As opposed to, well, I'm not willing to bet 6 or 8 weeks on it. I'm willing to put 2 weeks on. What can we put out there in 2 weeks? Sure, it's not going to be good enough to be complete, but is it enough to see if people want to use it? And another element of that in the outcome of the bet is, so anytime you release a feature, right? Think about it in like a, where does the feature come out? It's almost never the ideal, right? You could spend a year on a calendar, but it doesn't make sense to spend a year on a calendar. So it's not going to be the ideal calendar that you come out with. But instead of comparing what comes out to the ideal, they compare it down. how much did we get past the absolute minimum of what a calendar does that shows you what the dates are? Anything we added to that, we've added value on top of the minimum. We're not going to compare it to the ideal. We're going to compare it down, which makes the concept of the bet more realistic. Like, okay, we're going to bet 2 weeks on it. It's not what we're purposely not willing to bet on it in such a way that it goes closer to the ideal, but it's going to be just above the minimum or a lot above the minimum or whatever we're willing to actually bet.
Yeah. I don't know how they at Basecamp handle this, like in the shape up process or whatever, but like for you, so you give the go ahead, like, all right, let's do it 6 weeks or so to do this feature. Like, what do your check-ins look like? Like, how often are they pulling you in to say like, hey, here's the progress so far. Here's what we're sort of hung up on. Like, do they loop you in on that stuff like along the way?
I have not been looped in on that, and I want to be more involved on it. So roughly a year ago, I started exploring raising an institutional round, and I unplugged myself from the company for a while to pursue that and then changed my mind on it and plugged myself back in. But I haven't – it's almost like I wanted to be in a position where I was not needed in these individual things, and I wanted to put trust in people, and I do trust them. But what I need to come to terms with is I still have a lot of contribution to make on these individual pieces, especially around the product. And so I'm trying to figure out a way to plug back in. And this shape-up book showed me a path on how I can appropriately insert myself into the process without scrambling things, right? I'm always hesitant to scramble. I don't want to do that. And so the way they run it, right, a lot of this is a filter. Is okay, Basecamp is Basecamp. And even Basecamp being as amazing as they are, they didn't do this stuff overnight. It took them years to figure this stuff out. And so what parts of their process are right for us to introduce into our process and what parts are just not for us? What they do is they have that high-level shape-up meeting and then they hand off those basic wireframes and ideas to a team that's comprised of a designer and developers. And so when they're handing things off into the development process, there is no checklist in Jira of tasks. We right now can't do that. We don't have the people in place to hand it over in that way and let them figure it out. We still need to hand over a list of tasks in Jira. So that's like one of our limitations. Like, you know what? We can't do that right now. But what we can do is put more work at the front of the process that will make for better outcomes. And then once those things are handed into the development process, then that higher level grouping of people that are much closer to the customer can start shaping up the next things. It's almost like instead of just letting the specs be written by product, it's like a more collaborative effort into those specs between product, success, support, and myself.
It sounded like they really treat the shaping part of the phase as like a sprint in itself, and they might have like several feature ideas that are like in the shape mode, and only a few of them will ever actually get a green light to give to a team. Like, they have to get to a certain point of development in order to actually hand off to a designer developer team. And some of them they're doing the shaping and they decide like, well, it's not quite there yet, we don't, you know, or there are too many unknowns, let's table it for now, and then they'll come back to it 3 months down the road, you know.
Right. They can always decide because it's dual track. And so because the development process, because it's dual track, it gets the benefit of both sides. The development track isn't disturbed by these new ideas and new thoughts. And at the same time, you can work in isolation on the shaping of features. And that sounds like it would be calming for both sides.
I'm getting ready to maybe probably hire a first developer to work directly with me on stuff soon. But I'm just thinking back to what it was like when I was working on Ops Calendar, which I've now, you know, sunsetted, and I'm shutting that down to turn into Process Kit. But I spent a year and a half outsourcing to developers, and I would shape up the ideas. I would design everything. I would literally give them the list of tasks of how every feature and interaction should work. And then they go off and build it. And some of the features took 2, 3, 5x the length of time that I expected or that they quoted and everything. And then I would find out like after the fact, like, oh, they built it in a certain way that like I wouldn't have made that technical decision, you know, or they didn't realize how important or how unimportant some detail was. This is one of those things where I feel so grateful now for having learned full stack development, that I could actually collaborate on the implementation side of things now. that's what I'm most excited about hiring a developer, is that I could actually be involved in that and work through that process. Whereas before I could only design it. I can understand how they describe a technical challenge to me. They're not giving me all of the information, or they might not know what is a critical issue and what's not to bring up to me. You know, like, so I wouldn't say every company needs this sort of expertise at the top, but you do think about Basecamp, where it's like Jason Fried is a designer, DHH is a developer, and they're both sort of like world class at those things. And so if their opinion is pulled in to the implementation process, like, they've got a pretty credible, trustworthy voice, aside from just being the boss of the company. I mean, I think in Carthook, though, like, you still have that, in that, like, you come to the table with the e-commerce experience and the product knowledge, you know, and it's like,
right. So that part for me, the implementation will still be cloudy. But Basecamp 2, what they have there, yeah, so those two guys are obviously good at their respective crafts, but they still put almost all the trust into the team. And what they do is they have these safety mechanisms, right? Like, these are, again, things that we would not do right now, but is interesting how they came up with solutions. So they have, right, they say, we're willing to bet X number of weeks. We're willing to bet 6 weeks on this thing. Their safety mechanism is, if it gets to 6 weeks and it's not shippable, it gets killed. It just gets removed. We're not going to keep going another 2 weeks, another 4 weeks, another 6 weeks to get out the door, because, hey, we've already put 6 weeks on it. They say it's out. It's not being released. It's going to be put aside. If we want to bring it back in, it'll go through the shaping process again, and we'll make a bet on how long we want to do it, and it'll kind of start back up.
But then it's like one of those things where it's like, that's great in theory.
Yes, in theory.
But that's a feature that all these customers really ask for. So it's like, do we extend it? Like, we do need to ship it, like, right?
Right. Now, I will say that that's very appealing, because if I think back on our analytics project, it's been a year. It was not meant to be a year. So we released it 4 months ago, but we're still working on it. And if someone had come to me and said, are you willing to bet a year of development time on this? I would have said, hell no. Hell no. I would have said, let's pare this thing down by 90%. Let's just get people these basic numbers and tell them, you want the real detail numbers? We recommend using Little Data or Google Analytics or something else. And so we got into that trap. And I think that is totally normal for software. You start working on something, it's supposed to take 2 months, then it takes 4 months, and then you say, well, we've already taken 4 months on it, let's do another 2 months. And then all of a sudden, a 2 month thing turns into a 6 month thing. I think that is one of the most common things to happen in the process for anyone. So you can see that great in theory version that they do, that they kill it after 6 weeks. That's not for everybody, but they're trying to solve for some type of removal of the human emotion of, well, we've already done this much work, we may as well keep going.
Yeah. Yep. What do you call that?
Sunk cost.
Sunk cost, yeah.
Yep. There we go. Business school right there, baby. Every once in a while, you know?
Yeah. You might learn a thing or two here at Bootstrapped Web.
Oh, God. Or you go to University of Michigan and pay $35,000 a year to learn these basic concepts that you could have from a blog post. Either way.
Yep. Speaking of which, that does make me think a lot about hiring a developer. Like, what?
Yes, let's get into this. What's the approach?
Well, all right. So I was talking about this last week, but basically I'm thinking of this as like, this is a new business that I'm starting, and it's a software products business. Process Kit being the first main one of those, but I have Sunrise KPI. I've got a couple other ideas that I would like to develop at some point, obviously, because I can't ever stop with the ideas, but I definitely see this becoming like a Ruby on Rails based software company. My thinking was, at some point, my first hire in this new thing would be a developer to work with me directly, like collaborating on features for these apps. And I had been thinking that, like, once we get to a certain level of MRR, not even that high, a few thousand in MRR, like, I'll still pay my own salary from audience ops or whatever. Once, you know, Process Kit really gains decent traction, that's where I'm going to kind of pull the trigger and hire someone full-time or close to full-time to be that developer, so that we could move even faster. And then in the last like 2 weeks or so, I got some input from from some friends, combined with just looking at the roadmap for ProcessKit, combined with these other side hustle ideas that I would like to hack on, that I can go and spend a week and build a basic MVP of something in Rails, but I'm not going to distract myself with that right now. But if I had an extra pair of hands and we have a week where I'm sort of working on something on ProcessKit marketing, I could have him work on this idea for a little bit, or, you know, something like that. It just dawned on me, like, maybe I should just move this plan up and accelerate the plan to get a developer in here. I have the cash to sustain like a part-time person probably through the end of the year, assuming that they're not based in the US or Europe, most likely.
Yes. Right. Then you start going through the option set.
Oh, and sorry, the other piece of this, as I talked about last week, is that I would like somebody to help me continue to learn, but also help me bust through these roadblocks. Because I, once a week or so, I hit a code issue where I have to hop onto Code Mentor, pay for somebody's time for an hour, or I ask a friend for help. Having somebody on my team can be like my go-to code helper, basically. I did this week go to Upwork. I put up a post there, got something like 35 or 40 applications. 80% of them are from India. And I'm not against going with someone from like India, but I have had communication issues and sometimes quality issues, but there are some good people in that part of the world. But I'm probably leaning towards, I would really like to find somebody great in South America for the time zone thing, so that there's really no issues with time zones. That would probably be my ideal. And there's like three or four candidates currently from Upwork that are worth talking to, I think. And then there's a few in Eastern Europe that I would consider as well. Time zones are not as easy, but they could overlap with like half of my day. So it's really just a question of who's available. I would only hire the person if I think that they are really a great fit for this. If I can't find that great fit person, then I just won't hire somebody yet. Yeah. That's the thing. And it's a question of like, what is the market for this type of developer? Because it's sort of that mid-range between, it's not a full-time position, so I can't find somebody who's going to go quit their job for this. It's not a one-time freelance gig that'll be over in a month. Like, I'm definitely looking for somebody to commit like 3 days a week for many months. And maybe it'll grow into a full-time thing. But I am bootstrapped and self-funded, and I have some cash to throw at this, but I've seen cash flow issues pop up unexpectedly, and it has made me pretty conservative when it comes to hiring, especially hiring for a role like this, where it's not like audience ops where we just add another writer because we have billable client work to give them. Like,
yeah,
this is just like expense. Investing in the future. Yeah. Just expense.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. The immediate assumptions are potentially negative. Like, someone part-time that's going to be willing to do this, maybe they're not as good as someone who's good, has a full-time job, and getting paid well, and so on, that you would have to pull away from that full-time job. But the truth is, those assumptions are very often wrong these days. You can think of a lot of different scenarios, whether it's someone who is trying to get their own business off the ground, but wants some stability in their income, and so are willing to do half of their time to work for someone else. I mean, or they just had a kid and they don't want to work full-time. They want to only work. I mean, who knows? You should make those assumptions.
I know that a lot of people say like, oh, you got to go full time. You'll never get the commitment or the loyalty. But I personally have not seen that. I've worked with plenty of part time, but every week folks for years on end, both in audience ops and also developers. Like with Ops Calendar, I had two or three guys working with me for like a year and a half on a part time basis. I think that they were actually pretty good. The only reason I wouldn't work with them again now is because they were PHP, Laravel, and Vue, and I'm working with Ruby on Rails now. If I could find that same level of caliber and communication, but a Rails person, that would be great. And I mean, part of it is I'm going to need them to be on video calls with me, maybe do some pair programming and stuff. And like, they need to be able to do that. And you know, there can't be too much of a, you know, yes, like a language barrier there.
Right. What everyone tells you about what to do in this situation is due to their bias. It's their particular experience. And so if I could add my bias into the conversation, it would be to get the time zone right. as I've spoken to people over the past few months that are in a similar situation, more and more of them are looking to Latin America and working with recruiters in Latin America. And so paying up to find the person, but then once you find the person, it can be half-time or full-time, and it's still far cheaper than an American developer, though not cheap, and the time zone makes a lot more possible than if you had that struggle on top of everything else.
Yeah, so I did get an introduction to the recruiter, I think the one that you're probably talking about. So I might talk to him, but it is interesting every time I go to Upwork just to see the worldwide market for these roles. I mean, it's just like no matter what, like you're always going to get like 80% from India and some percentage from like Pakistan and then some percentage from like Eastern Europe. And then you look at South America or Latin America and it's like 10% or so of applicants. And then of those, you know, you got to find the ones that are good. So it's like, but that's only Upwork. You know, I haven't really looked beyond there yet. I might find other job boards to post to. It's always difficult when I know that I'm limited to these regions of the world, you know, because I could go to my network, my audience and everyone, but like I can't afford most of their rates, I think, to be honest. And so it's difficult to like go to those pockets of the world. Not impossible, and I've done it before, but it's just in terms of like where do you actually go? Like which websites, which job boards?
Yeah, I think that's why the recruiter piece starts to make sense, because it's really hard to search and it's hard to find. It's hard to identify the right people when the pool is so large. We've started using a recruiter in Slovenia also. We're finding success with it and it's more expensive, but getting the right person is worth a lot.
I can't remember, like, why did you start in Slovenia? I mean, I know your first guy was from there, but like, how did that come about?
Sure. So I had a friend, an online friend that I had been through an online course with, and he was from Slovenia. And we would speak every few months and just say, how's it going? What's up? What are you up to? And when I spoke to him and said, you know, it's time for us to find our first full-time engineer, and I don't know what to do because of the same situation that you're in. I don't know if I can afford this. I don't know if I can afford that. I don't know if it's half-time, part-time, full-time. I want full-time, but I can't do it in the U.S. And he said, there's good talent in Slovenia and the community's pretty cool. So I can just post something in the Facebook group for you and tell you what I find. And I said, that would be amazing. And that's how we found our first one, Rock, who's our CTO. With that, when we came time for the second one, Rock said, look, I could do the same thing. I can just post in the Facebook group. A lot of people know who I am and we'll see what happens. And then that's how we found Jan. Yeah. And then we went
and
with
just developed like a hub there.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly right. Exactly right. So those two we were with, they're still with us, Rock and Jan, and you know, they're at the highest levels of the company. And then it started to make sense. Oh, let's get you guys an office together at a co-working space and then find one other person. And then just kind of kept rolling from there. And now we find ourselves with this hub that we love.
Yeah. I mean, like my ideal on this would be for somebody to have somebody to work directly with for a while. It would be nice to not work completely solo for a while. But then for this person to sustain, become full time, and this is the start of a company with a team. I could maybe even stretch to do a full time person for like, I don't know, a couple of months, but then if cash gets tight, then they would have to leave completely and go find another full time job.
It'd be better off going the other way. Right. And I was 100% clear and transparent with Rock about everything from the beginning. I said, look, here's the situation we're in. Here's what I want to happen. Help me make that happen and good things happen from there. But at first, this is what I can afford. Can we do it this way? You know, he was like a co-founder effectively at that stage, and the relationship got built that way. And now we have the relationship is everything now. Right. Think about how critical this relationship is, like this friendship between Rocket. He's running the Slovenian part of the company. And that needed to be based on, you know, transparency and honesty and trust and all that stuff. And now we're like, he's one of my best friends in the world. And it's necessary on the business side too, because it requires an enormous amount of trust on both sides.
Yeah, there's plenty of things to do, the features I want to build. But I'm also like not in a super rush. It's not like I have a deadline to hit and so I just need more firepower right now. It's just that like anything new that I want to do moving forward, it's going to be software related. And I just want to make sure that I'm investing as much in that direction as possible. And if that means getting a second set of hands to work on more software stuff, like that's the goal, you know? So it's like,
yeah,
that's kind of what
and I'm thinking. That can be a great recipe. Good, yeah, man. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the updates on how that side of it goes. Wish me luck in my stress management.
Yeah.
And in my moving.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get through it.
yeah. And that's it. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. Great to get caught up.
Yep. All right. See you.
See you.